I'm going to let's see how it works. I was thinking, at least in the evening, I'm not really sure what to do here, but this evening at least we'll continue where I left off in Ranchi with chapter 16 of Canto 1. Chapter 16 of Canto 1 is how Maharaj Parikshit received the age of Kali. Maharaj Parikshit was the grandson of the Pandavas. How was that? Who was the mother and father of Maharaj Parikshit? Who were the mother and father of Maharaj Parikshit? Uttara. That's right. That's right. And who was the mother and father of Uttara? King Virata. King Virata. I don't know his wife's name. What happened was, this is for kids, this is story time, you can pay attention, it's story time. The Pandavas were in exile because they lost that gambling match. For how many years? 14 years. And then for the last year, they were to be incognito. Incognito means no one was supposed to know where they were. So they dressed them, they made a plan. They dressed themselves as if they weren't royal family members, and they each took up some service in the kingdom of King Virata. And what was Arjuna's service? He was a dancing instructor for the daughter of the king. And he not only was he, I mean, he's a Kshatriya, he's not a dancing instructor, but he took up that service. And he appeared, or he conducted himself as if he was, well, a nice word that they use in the Mahabharata is a eunuch. It's a man who behaves like a woman. Eunuch. So, somehow, King Virata agreed to that. Because Arjuna was a good dance instructor. And then something happened. Something happened. One of the somethings that happened was the time of the Pandava's exile was coming to a close, and the Kaurava army somehow decided that they were going to invade King Virata's kingdom and take it over. And so, although Arjuna was in this position of being a eunuch, he was a Kshatriya, so he wanted to protect. And so he took his bows and arrows, and he defeated the entire Kaurava army. And the Kauravas came to understand that back in Hastinapur, who could do this? There's only one person that could do this. That's Arjuna. And so they wanted to expose the fact that Arjuna was not in hiding like he was supposed to be. Anyway, so there was this whole intrigue. Some other things happened with Bhima. Bhima showed strength that just was incredible. without going into the details, a nice description. So when King Virata came to know that the dance instructor wasn't just a dance instructor, it's the mighty Arjuna. So he then suggested, why don't you marry my daughter? And Arjuna said, marry your daughter. Your daughter is young enough to be my daughter. I have a son who's old enough to marry your daughter. Your daughter can marry my son. And King Virata said, very well. My daughter can marry your son. And so the marriage took place. Abhimanyu married Uttara. And so Abhimanyu was the son of Arjuna. Who was the mother of Abhimanyu? The mother of Abhimanyu. Subhadra. Subhadra. Subhadra and Arjuna. There she is. Subhadra and Arjuna. How was it that, this is kids' time, how was it that Krishna married Subhadra? Does anybody know that story? Very nice story. Once upon a time. Very nice story. When Arjuna, this takes place before their exile. When the Pandavas first came back, Pandu was the king because his elder brother, Dhritarashtra, was blind. And so as the blind, although he was the elder brother, because he was blind, he could not be king. So Pandu became king. One of them had to be king because their father, or the previous king, Vichitraviri, he was already deceased. And because Vichitraviri was deceased, the arrangement was made that the wives of Vichitravirya would give birth from the brother of Vichitravirya, who they thought was going to be Bhima, and it turned out to be Vyasadeva, and Dhritarashtra, Pandu, and Vidura were born. So there was no king for some time. But when Pandu was old enough, he became king. And Pandu was very strong as a fighter. And he went out and there was some problem in the kingdom. And he took his military and he immediately defeated the disturbing element and came back, and everyone was so happy. Virtuous, powerful, great king to succeed Vichitraviriya. But Pandu, he just liked living in the forest more than he liked living in a palace. So he began ruling from a distant place in the forest. And as time passed, Yudhisthira was born. And then Bhima was born, and Arjuna was born, and Nakula and Sahadev were born. The five brothers were born. But Pandu had this curse because he had... Anyways, I'm getting way off the subject. Pandu, there was a curse that if Pandu had union with his wife, either of his wives, immediately he would die. So after the sons were born, Pandu died. In one moment of not being able to control his lusty desire, although he knew the consequence and Madri knew the consequence, they had union and he died. And so it was decided between the two wives, they were both going to enter into the funeral pyre of their husband, but they understood someone has to look after the sons. So it was arranged that Madri would enter into the fire and Kunti would remain with the five sons. So they came back to the royal palace. And now the boys were boys. They weren't old enough to become king yet, and they were very powerful. When they first came back to Hastinapur, it was like the reunion of a big family. Dhritarashtra had been acting in the palace like he was the king, although Pandu was the king, and when they heard that Pandu had died, they felt distressed. At the same time, Dhritarashtra was a little happy. He was unhappy, but it meant that his sons could continue in their position, at least for some time. Because he was the elder, Pandu was gone, so he was directing his sons to rule until the Pandavas were of age. But actually, in his heart, he was attached to the idea that he would be king, and vicariously he could be king through his sons. So he was attached to his sons remaining in that position. And they knew his mindset. And so different intrigues began to remove the Pandavas. The first intrigue was the Duryodhan just couldn't stand Bhima. Bhima was so strong. He was so envious, to the core envious, and so Bhima was so strong, he wanted to eliminate Bhima, his cousin. So because of that envious desire, the Lord of the Heart supplied an idea to him how he could do it. He had a plan to poison Bhima. And he went to his father and made the proposal. And Dhritarashtra refused. This is terrible. How could you think? He's one of the sons of Pandu. Pandu was so dear. You know that I would like to see you be the king, but to kill the son of Pandu in his absence? No. But Duryodhan continued to work on that desire that he knew that Dhritarashtra had. That you will actually be able to rule through me. You can't actually sit on the royal throne, but I will act as your agent. And if Bhima is out of the way, the Pandavas will be so disturbed. And so Dhritarashtra became silent. And Duryodhan knew, now I've got him. So he called in Purochana, and together the two of them hatched this plan that they would build a summer cottage, like a summer palace for the Pandavas. And in that summer palace, they would then involve the Pandavas in sporting activities, and then after the sporting activities, they would poison them. So everything was in Dhritarashtra knew the whole thing. So then this whole trying to poison Bhima. You know all that story? The poison? You don't know the story. This summer cottage was by a lake or by a river. And so, because they're young Kshatriya boys, they like sports. So they did water sports. And Bhima would just defeat everybody left and right. He would push them underwater and splash water in their face and be victorious and powerful Bhima. And that just made Duryodhana more angry and more angry and more angry. So after all the water sports where Bhima was victorious over everybody, they sat down to have their meal. And personally, Duryodhana put enough poison to poison 10 elephants in his meal. And Bhima just ate. Bhima's voracious eater. Any voracious eaters here? Nobody has the voracious appetite like Bhima. He ate and ate and ate and ate. And Duryodhana was just amazed. Not only how much he ate, but nothing happened as he was eating all this poison. And so Bhima went to rest after a big meal by the side of the river. And while he was resting, Parochana and Duryodhana, they tied him up very tightly in ropes and pushed him into the river. They thought he was dead and they're just disposing of his dead body. And when he went into the river, the celestial Nagas captured him from the underworld. And they bit him. And they bit him in such a way that it neutralized the poison. And they dragged him down to the underworld where the Nagas live. Now somehow this is the celestial Ganges, and the celestial Ganges comes from beyond this universe, into this universe, through the heavenly planets, to this and down even into lower regions. So the Nagas took him to that lower region. And when Bhima awoke, he looked around and he didn't recognize anybody. He just saw all these Nagas. But one of the Nagas was somehow, I forget, there's some kind of some relation to Bhima. I forget how that works. And so he honored Bhima. And he told Bhima what had happened. Because the Nagas have this capacity, not only they can travel in different regions, but they have this kind of clairvoyance. They can understand things beyond their own immediate physical vicinity. They told Bhima exactly what happened, this whole murder plot to kill him. Because if Duryodhana was envious of him. But it didn't work because the Nagas neutralized the poison. It just happened by the arrangement of providence. And so, to honor him, they dressed him in celestial Naga robes. You know, like a king or something. And then they gave him these big kumbhas, like pots or jugs of Naga elixir, some kind of special beverage, that when you drink one of them, something, it gives one the strength of 100 elephants. And he drank some number of them. And they were amazed. And Bhima passed out afterwards. He slept for a week. And meanwhile, back in earthly planet, when the Pandavas, because they were all exhausted after their sporting activities in the water and a very large meal, they took rest, they didn't see Bhima. They thought Bhima must have gone back to the royal palace. Bhima hadn't gone back to the royal palace. And Kunti, when all the Pandavas came and said, "Minus brother Bhima, where's Bhima?" She said, "Well, he's with you." No, we thought he went back to the palace." "Oh, no." Then Vidura went to Kunti. Kunti went to Vidura, because Vidura's Vidura. He's like, he knows everything. Uncle Vidura. He knew of the whole intrigue, and he informed Kunti what the plan was. But he said, "Do not worry, because Vyasadeva said when Bhima was conceived." No, not Vyasadeva said. Some sage said that Bhima would not be defeated by any mortal. So don't worry. Everything is all right. Just hearing the pacifying words of Uncle Vidura, Kunti was okay. Even her son wasn't there. She was okay. The value of having shelter of a sadhu and having faith in that sadhu. All of her anxiety was gone. But it was a whole week. And Bhima hadn't come back. Because he was zonked out from drinking this naga elixir. When he awoke, they said, "We've never seen anyone drink this much of this beverage. You're going to be so powerful. Hundreds of elephants, you'll be that strong. No one will be able to defeat you." And no one was able to defeat him. Such strength Bhima had. Said, you better get back to the earthly realm, because Kunti and your brothers are very much in anxiety about your well-being. So they quickly brought him to the surface of the Ganges, where he had entered. He looked around, he recognized everything, back into familiar territory, and went back to Hastinapur. And when he went back to Hastinapur, everybody was so happy to see him, except for three people: Duryodhan and Purochana and Dhritarashtra, because they thought he was finished. Later on, when Bhima was with Yudhishthira and his brothers, he informed him exactly what had happened, how he was, the whole thing, the whole intrigue, the whole murder plot. And Yudhishthira gave very wise advice. Yudhishthira always gives wise advice. His wise advice was, "We've just come back after being away from the royal palace for a long time. We have no connections here. If we made a big scene about this, who knows how it might end up. Even a terrible wrong was done. A murder plot was hatched by the in charge around here, the king, so-called, the one looking after the kingdom. But he has all these connections, all these friends, and this little infrastructure, and we must be absolutely silent." Because Bhima was panging his arm, saying, "Just tell me, I'll crush him to death." No. So, on Yudhishthira's word, the Pandavas remained silent. So then there was the next plan. The next plan was the House of Lakh plan. So the House of Lakh plan was that they would build a house, another nice summer home, and it would be built with highly inflammable materials, and to make sure, they would dip the flammable materials in shellac so that when you put a match to it, at once the whole thing would burst into flames and there'd be no chance for the Pandavas to get out. Dhritarashtra heard the plan and he remained silent. So an architect was called in and the house was planned and built, and it was a big ceremonious thing, and the Pandavas knew this is another somehow diabolical something or other by Duryodhan. But Yudhisthira said, what can we do? We don't have strength to resist this. Let's just go forward being very cautious. And as they were leaving to go to this planned residence, Vidura came out of the whole crowd dressed like a mendicant, speaking in an aborigine tongue, a tribal aborigine tongue dialect, and explained to Yudhisthira in a riddle what was the plan. I can't remember the exact words. It's in this 13th chapter. Something about fire cannot touch the soul, though it can destroy the body, something like that. So nobody could understand except Yudhisthira. After he left, Kunti asked Yudhisthira, what did Uncle Vidura say? I couldn't understand what he was talking about. And he explained that there's a plot to kill us. He's letting us know. Heads up. Beware. He came again to inform them when it was going to happen. He told them that in this riddle, they should dig a tunnel. So they called a miner, someone that dug tunnels to mine things, and he dug a tunnel through the floor, and they covered the hole in the floor and the tunnel that went out heading towards the river. And so when that very night that they were supposed to be burned, they were attending a big festival instead. And while they were out attending this big festival, a family of 5 boys and a woman came and requested residence. They were in the house when the house was set on fire. So everybody thought, when they found the bones of one woman and 5 boys, the Pandavas were dead and Kunti was dead. But they had previously, knowing the situation, they had escaped through the tunnel and got out on the other side. And so while they came to the river, there was one boatman. But they didn't know if the boatman was Duryodhan, another Duryodhana's trick. But the boatman, it was arranged by Vidura to take them on the boat downstream so far that no one would know where they were. So the boatman told the same riddle that Vidura had told when they left. So then they knew this is Uncle Vidura looking after us, spreading his wings like a giant bird looking after the little birds. So they got on the boat and went a long distance downstream, and they remained in disguise. While they were in disguise, this was when this Swayamvar of Draupadi was taking place. So, although he was in a disguise, he was the one that could perform the archery skill to win Draupadi's Swayamvar. Which is a whole story. When Draupadi was brought back before Kunti, Arjuna came to inform Kunti, "Guess what, Mom? I've got a wife. And her name is Draupadi." And without even looking, she said, "Oh, she's a very elevated personality. Everything that all of you boys have, you should share with one another. She should be the co-wife of all five." Just by Kunti's making that statement, they all accepted. And the arrangement was that Kunti's arrangement was that as they were traveling, still in this incognito situation, each of the brothers would be with Kunti for 1 month, and wherever the brother and Kunti were, the other brothers would not intrude. They would have that privacy. So on one occasion, word came to Arjuna that there was some cows and some dacoits were attacking the cow herdsmen to steal away their cows. Arjuna's a kshatriya. So he quick ran to get his bow and arrows, and his bow and arrows were in the same chamber where Yudhisthira and Kunti were. Yudhisthira and Draupadi. But he went inside, got his bow and arrows, and went and defeated the dacoits. Bow! Arjuna. And then when he came back, he announced to Yudhisthira, "I violated the instruction of our mother. Our agreement was we would not interfere with or intrude in the chamber where Draupadi was with each of the brothers during that month that they were supposed to be with her. I violated the instructions of Kunti, and so I'm going to go away in exile for 1 year." And Yudhisthira said, "Arjuna, the purpose of your entering into this room was an emergency. You were doing your prescribed duty as a kshatriya. There's no punishment for that. I understand. It's not a violation. It's another principle. And you're acting for giving protection. Please don't speak like this." Arjuna was adamant. "No. What I did was the right thing, but I also violated the instruction of our mother, and therefore I'm going. I'm determined I'm going." And so he went. He separated from his four brothers and he went to purify himself. He went to pilgrimage places throughout all of India. And many exciting things happened. But one of those things that happened, many exciting things happened. But one of those things that happened was he also visited Dwarka, because Dwarka is a holy place. And what do we know about Dwarka? Krishna lives in Dwarka. Did you write any more Krishnas in your book? Can you write one more Krishna in your book? Krishna. Same page? Okay. Go for it. Krishna 2. So, Krishna lives in Dwarka. And guess who Arjuna wanted to see? Krishna! But there was a little problem. There's always a problem, isn't there? Even if you're Arjuna, there's a problem. What to speak of us? The problem was he was in this incognito thing. He was on... He left on pilgrimage and he was incognito. So what he decided to do was... he went dressed as a sannyasi. He went into Dwarka as a sannyasi. And he managed to go see Krishna. And now there's some detail that I'm not remembering. This is all about how Arjuna and Subhadra became married. So Arjuna went into Dwarka. And Balaram, you can write Balaram too? Go ahead, Balaram. Balaram very much enjoyed bringing sannyasis into his home. So he heard that there was this sannyasi that had just come into Dwarka, so he invited him to come to his home. And Balaram's the elder brother, Krishna's the younger brother, and Subhadra is the younger sister. So Balaram was very protective of his younger sister. He didn't even let her out of the palace. In fact, Balaram had an idea that his younger sister, Subhadra, should marry, you want to guess who? Duryodhana. So Arjuna was sitting there with his big broad shoulders and big arms and sitting there like a sannyasi with Subhadra coming and bringing all the prasadam. And out of the corner of his eye, he couldn't help but be attracted by the beauty of Subhadra. And Subhadra couldn't help but notice that he was attracted to her. So that went on. And then Krishna had the opportunity to spend some time with his dearmost friend Arjuna. And he asked him about his travels and his brothers and so many things. And he came to understand from his talks with Arjuna that Arjuna was very attracted to Subhadra. And Krishna was attracted to the idea of Arjuna being attracted to Subhadra. So he said, let me just find out how Subhadra feels about this. What are her ideas about marriage? So Krishna arranged, because it's his sister, he arranged a discussion with Subhadra. And how's it going, Subhadra? What are your thoughts about marriage? Well, now that you mention it, you know, Balaram has this idea that I'm supposed to marry Duryodhana. And I really have no interest in marrying Duryodhana. Well, is there someone that you do have in your mind to marry? Well, I don't know. There's this sannyasi that comes and he seems to be very attracted to me. And he has such nice qualities and he speaks so nicely. And so Krishna then understood the mind of Subhadra. So he went back to Arjuna and gave him the thumbs up. Said, what you should do is just stay incognito like this. Stay it as a sannyasi. Just Balaram will keep inviting you. And that is the only way you're going to get to have a little sangha with Subhadra, just do that for a while. Little attachment will form, and I'll give you the next signal. So that started happening, and they became very attracted to one another. Then Krishna informed Arjuna that there's a very special festival, something like what happened with Rukmini. There's a the royal family had a place of worship, and Rukmini informed Krishna on a certain day, I'll go to do this worship, and that's when you can come and kidnap me. So Krishna gave a similar plan to Arjuna. There's this one big festival each year. Balaram lets Subhadra out of the palace. The whole royal family goes, and if you just take off your sannyas thing, get in your kshatriya thing, get on your chariot and come screeching in, and put Subhadra on your chariot and roar off, I'll take care of the rest. You're sure you're on time? Did you write Balaram's name? Let me see. Did you write it? That's yes. Okay, good. Did he write? Very good. Krishna, can you write Arjuna now? Arjuna? Arjuna. A-R-J-U-N-A. Arjuna. Arjuna. Let him do it. Let him do it. So Arjuna came on his chariot right at the right time. And Subhadra recognized, he's not just a sannyasi, it's Arjuna. And he put her on his chariot and dashed off full speed. Balaram was in disbelief. The Yadu dynasty, what a disgrace. Get your arms, go after this, whoever he is, and destroy him, get Subhadra back. We can't, the Yadu dynasty, we can't let this happen. Let's go ask Krishna what to do. Krishna always gives us good counsel, we'll take his blessings. And all the soldiers came to Krishna's chamber, and Krishna was just smiling. Balaram was in his maha kshatriya mode. Krishna, just give the word and we're off. And Krishna just smiled. He didn't say a word. Balaram was so bewildered. And Krishna spoke very mildly and said, actually, I don't think it's such a bad idea. The Kuru dynasty and the Yadu dynasty, they're both powerful dynasties. And if there was a marriage between the Yadu dynasty and the Kuru dynasty, that would be very good. Balaram, what are you speaking? He just kidnapped Subhadra. What are you saying? He said, well, in Kshatriya code, this kind of marriage is honorable. In worldly society, that's something else. But Kshatriya society, it's a great honor that our daughter, our sister, is married to a great hero. And he proves his prowess. And he just proved his prowess. Balaram is losing steam here. And then Krishna went further and said, actually, what we should do is we should gather up great gifts and ornaments and jewels and bring so much of our treasury and give them as gifts to Arjuna. and Subhadra and bless them for their wedding. Balaram was in disbelief, but he had such affection for Krishna, he went along with it. And they went and they caught up with Arjuna and Subhadra, and they brought them back to Dwaraka, and they blessed them, and off they went to Hastinapur for his marriage. Not Hastinapur, for where the Pandavas were, and Subhadra was married to Arjuna. And from the combination of Subhadra and Arjuna, there was Abhimanyu as their son. And then later Abhimanyu married Uttara. And Abhimanyu was killed during the Kurukshetra battle, and Uttara was carrying her yet unborn child, Maharaj Parikshit. So when Maharaj Parikshit was born, he became the successor king. And in the 16th, now we're back to the 16th chapter of this canto. Maharaj Parikshit hears that in his kingdom somebody has violated the four regular principles. Somebody has acted against the codes of Brahminical culture. Someone has acted against the principle of protection of mother cow. He was so disturbed. Prabhupada indicates, so this is review of the early part of the chapter 16. Prabhupada indicates that this means prior to the age of Kali, this thing just didn't happen. Unheard of. Just like sometimes people ask the question, what about attraction between female and female, or male and male? It's just not addressed in the Vedic scriptures. But now there's all this stuff going on about marriages. You're aware of that. It's like a big political issue, gay marriages and passing laws in America and state by state. It's so bizarre. There's nothing in the scriptures about it because it's so bizarre. And anyway, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare Hare. They have all these things. Now it goes into the lawyers' hands about retirement pensions and insurance policies for the marriage partner, male to male or female to female. It's crazy. Cuckoo. Cuckoo. Really crazy. So in Maharaj Parikshit's kingdom, there just didn't exist these deviations of the age of Kali. So he was very, very disturbed. But at the same time, he was feeling very enthused because Kshatriyas like a challenge. Prabhupada explains, just like a sports person, they like some sporting match. Whatever their favorite sport is, they like some sporting match. A Kshatriya likes combat. They like a challenge. So he gathered up all of his armies And he himself, with his bow and arrows, he got on his royal chariot and he set off to tour all of his kingdom, which he's the emperor of the world, so it's a big kingdom, to do two things. Well, do three things. One thing was to check this influence. That's a duty of a kshatriya, where there's deviation of religious principle, to put a stop to it. Another was by giving his elevated saintly association to bring up the character and the quality of people in general. A sadhu will do like that, and a royal king will do like that. Bring people up by their traveling and giving association. And a third purpose was to extract tribute or taxes from those kingdoms that he visited. And as he would visit these different places, the kings were all very happy to see him. He's Maharaj Parikshit, so dear to the Lord, pure devotee of the Lord, emperor of the world. And so they received him very, very nicely. And culturally, just like the expedition, the traveling of the royal army, was what a scene. Elephants and infantry and chariots and decorations, and what a display of grandeur. Cultural, amazing display. And same when he was received. He was received by the kings with all pomp and splendor. And one of the things that was done when he was received was there were persons expert. I don't know what the Sanskrit word is, but I'm sure there is one. The English word is bard. There is a priestly or brahminical function. Some brahmanas were expert in puja. Some brahmanas, called vipras, they're expert in teachings. Some brahmanas were expert in rituals. Some brahmanas are expert in history. Some brahmanas are expert in narrations. So these are the brahmanas that are expert in narrations. As Maharaj Parikshit would travel, they would narrate the glories of Mahabharata, narrate the glories of his grandparents, Arjuna, the Pandavas, and all the wonderful, wonderful, wonderful glories of Krishna's deep affection for the Pandavas and their close, intimate relationship, such an intimate relationship they had with Krishna, that Krishna accepted posts. Krishna is the personality of Godhead, and they're his devotees. They know him as the personality of Godhead. It's not like Vrindavan, where they know him as their dear son or their dear friend or their dear beloved. They knew that he was the personality of Godhead. But because the affection that they had for him was so strong that they would just forget, or somehow by the influence of Yoga Maya not treat him like the personality of Godhead, but knowing the affection that Krishna had for them, Krishna placed himself subordinate to them. The personality of Godhead becoming the chariot driver of Arjuna. We know the story from Chaitanya Charitamrita. When Lord Chaitanya was visiting in Sri Rangam, he had darshan of the deity of Ranganath, and he was in such ecstasy that he had kirtan that went on for hours and hours, and dancing and leaping in the air and carrying on like nobody carries on in Sri Rangam. Everything is very on reverential. You've been there? Very solemn, very grave, on reverence. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's kirtan just sent everybody through the ceiling. It's a tall ceiling. So he stayed there for some time. And while he was there, the story of he saw one Brahmin who was reading Bhagavad Gita and he was crying. So Lord Chaitanya went and asked the Brahmin, "My dear Brahmin, what are you understanding from your reading of Bhagavad Gita that makes you cry like this?" And he said, "Actually, I'm a Brahmin, but I'm practically illiterate." Sometimes the story is told he was holding the book upside down. I can't pronounce the syllables correctly. The other Brahmanas, they make fun of me. But when I'm reading Bhagavad Gita, I can't really understand the meaning except this. How kind is Krishna? He's the personality of Godhead, but when I think of Krishna, the Supreme Lord becoming the chariot driver of his devotee, my heart just becomes filled with such deep appreciation for Krishna's affection for his devotee. Tears just well in my eyes. What can I do? And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu confirmed, "You are the true scholar of Bhagavad Gita. Maybe you can't pronounce the Sanskrit properly, and maybe you cannot recite all the slokas and explain their meanings, but you understand the essence of Bhagavad Gita. You are the true scholar of Bhagavad Gita." So the bards, they were also appreciating the intimacy that Krishna had with the Pandavas, the intimacy the Pandavas had with Krishna. He took subordinate positions to them. Sometimes he took an incredible superior position to them too. Yudhisthira Maharaj, he knew that Krishna was the personality of Godhead. Grandfather Bhishma, he knew that Krishna was the personality of Godhead. Krishna was made the leading personality of the Rajasuya Yajna that completely fried. You have that expression here too. Disturbed the mind of Shishupal. And Grandfather Bhishma was in front of everyone glorifying Krishna. He's not just the cousin of the Pandavas or some powerful prince. He is the super soul who resides in the heart of every living entity. He is the very source of the material creation, and yet he enters into it and performs wonderful past. And he was just going on and on. What Krishna's position really is, which was sizzling the brain of Shishupal. And so Shishupal stood up and started blaspheming Krishna. Bhima wanted to bash him. Krishna stopped him. And finally, Shishupal lost his head. But he was liberated. So the Pandavas knew that Krishna was the personality of Godhead. But yet they, out of their affection for him, they allowed him to take a subordinate position. One time, when the Pandavas, there was some danger in a camp where they were. Krishna volunteered, "Don't worry, you all take rest. I'll stay up all night and watch as the night watchman." And Krishna did that. Of course, Krishna has a spiritual body. He doesn't need to sleep. No problem. But Krishna is the personality of Godhead. he took the knight, you know, the chotidar position, the knight guard, just making sure that the Pandavas would be safe. He became their messenger. If some way or another the Kurukshetra battle could be averted, the Pandavas really wanted that to happen. So Krishna took the message from them. Isn't there some way we can make a truce? Just give the Pandavas 5 states. Give them 5 cities. Give them 5 villages. No, no, no. Became the messenger. When he heard those descriptions, the heart of Prikshit Maharaj just burst in ecstasy. How glorious were my ancestors, my grandfathers. There's another parallel kind of explanation that comes in Brihat Bhagavatamrita when Gopakumar is visiting in Dwaraka, and Vasudeva Krishna recognizes that Gopakumar has this kind of Vrindavan-like mood, because Gopakumar was a Gopa. He's a cowherd boy from Mathura. And then he was visiting in Dwaraka, so Krishna made an arrangement for his residence to be with Uddhava, because Uddhava had also visited Braja. And Uddhava knew the mood of the residents of Vrindavan. So Narada was one day paid a visit to Uddhava's home, and this really deep discussion took place about the distinction between Dwaraka and Vrindavan, or the mood of worshipping Krishna in opulence and the mood of worshipping Krishna in Braja. And after glorifying that mood of Braja, Narada said, "I'd like to explain to you how to achieve that, but I don't have the qualification." So with folded palms he came to Uddhava and said, "Could you explain?" And Uddhava said, "Narada, why are you asking me to speak? You're a Brahmin. I'm a Kshatriya. It would be very improper for me, a Kshatriya, to speak on such topics before you." And Narada laughed and laughed and laughed. He said, "What are you saying? Uddhava, you're a resident of the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, these distinctions of Brahmana and Kshatriya and Vaishya and Shudra, they don't pertain at all. You're a perfected soul. Why are you speaking like this?" And Uddhava became indignant. He said, "What do you mean? Even Krishna himself, here in Dwaraka, he takes the role of a Kshatriya." And Narada cracked up. He just laughed. He fell to the ground just holding his belly. How glorious is Krishna? Just see. He takes a position where he's subordinate to the Brahmins. He's the personality of Godhead. Just as he takes a position subordinate to the Pandavas. Why does he do that? It's his love. How wonderful is our Master, Lord Krishna. Now he says these things in Bhagavad Gita. He creates the system of Varnashram, Chaturvarna Mayashristam Guna Karma Vibhagasha. Mayashristam, they're created by Krishna, but he's not part of that system. But he plays the part of that system. when he's a cowherd boy, he plays like he's a Vaishya. And when he's in Dwaraka, he plays the part of a Kshatriya. And when he's with Madhu Mangal, and they're dressing up as Brahmins, so he could perform the Surya Puja for Radharani, he plays the part of a Brahmin. That's a long story too. But Krishna is not part of that system. He acts that way in some cases for instructing, and for the most part it's for the reciprocating loving exchanges with his devotees. And that's what Maharaj Parikshit was appreciating. And that's what, now bringing all of this to home, to Vishakhapatnam, the purpose of all of this narration is to draw our attention to Krishna. And the purpose of drawing our attention to Krishna is to have a loving relationship with Krishna. The purpose of our life in Krishna consciousness is to enter or to restore our loving relationship with Krishna. And do you think that it's possible to have to restore your loving relationship with Krishna alone? Is that possible? Not even desirable, nor is it possible. And practically speaking, that means to restore our loving relationship with Krishna, we have to restore our loving relationship with those who are in relationship with Krishna, our loving relationship with the devotees of the Lord. So we have some little devotees here, or at least trying to be devotees. Wow, you wrote lots of Krishnas in your book. Very good. Can you write Subhadra? Subhadra? S-U B-H B H A A D R A D R A Subhadra. Vaishnava Sangha. Through the association of those who have attraction for Krishna to awaken and develop further our attraction for Krishna. And that's the fabric of our loving relationships with one another. So there are different personalities in different stages of their life. Small children, young school age, college age, married. Up there in years, in their family life, ready to move on to the next situation. We got a big range here. And that's natural, because life does have those divisions, and it gives a very good opportunity for appreciating different persons in different situations and seeing to the needs of the different persons according to their situations. It's a challenge, at the same time it's very natural and very nice. So the goal of it all is to awaken our loving attraction for Krishna. And each one of the relationships that we have with one another, each member of the community, it provides us another opportunity to render service. and through the medium of that service develop an affectionate and loving relationship, of course, one that's appropriate for our situation and their situation. So we'll continue on this theme a little bit, I think, tomorrow morning. Go into the encounter of Maharaj Parikshit with the personality of Kali. Before that, the encounter, the discussion between the bull and the cow. Any comments, questions, anyone? Yes.
And also to be set is our own mind. Our own mind. Yes. Now, there is something which every day, the mind placing a drop of using a better devotee, and not to just service a single devotee, we can do that. Certain relationship with our own station. So, how do we practically do it? In the sense that the mind.
Someone should put some oil on those hinges. Well, a short answer is by the process of Krishna consciousness. And that has its different components. One of the I was recently asked this question, and I came up with a very amazingly concise answer. But we have to have the right conceptions. We have to carry a spiritual conception, which means we have to let go of a material conception of who we are, who the other person is, what relationship means, what expectations we have from that relationship. Have to spiritualize. We can't enter into that position if we hold on to material conceptions. Another is we have to have something that cleanses the heart. Removes dirty things from the heart. Even if we have the right conception, our heart has to become freed. So we have ways of cleansing the heart. Primarily it's kirtan, worship of the deity, our process of sadhana bhakti. Molding our lives in such a way that in the framework of the mode of goodness, these spiritual activities ignite and purify the heart. A third component is humble service. Now, in one sense, humble service connects to having the right conception. In other words, we can't let go of material conceptions if we hold on to material conceptions. If we remain proud of what we think we understand and who we think we are. But it's worth making a special category because it's so important. In Brihat Bhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami makes a special point about how important humility is. The mood with which we carry out those things which we understand. The application of the conceptual things in a humble service mood. Hey. So when we say a humble service mood, it covers many things at once. It means those who are superiors, those who are peers, and those who are subordinates. In all circumstances, a humble service mood. Directed by the right spiritual conceptions, with a means to purify our hearts that will give us the strength. Stop. Thank you. It'll give us the strength to do what we know is the right thing to do in our dealings, in our exchanges. Sanatana Goswami explains that both the service mood and the humility that we carry, they enhance one another. The entering into loving, as we have loving relationships with Krishna, automatically we feel more humble about ourselves. And as we feel more humble about ourselves, it enhances our loving attraction for Krishna. One enhances the other. In other words, we're accustomed to thinking things simply as this is the cause and that's the effect. And Sanatana Goswami is explaining they're both, they move together, cause and effect, in both directions. The medium of our relationship with Krishna is service. The medium of a relationship that we have with anybody is through service. So if we serve in a mood of the humble servant, there's the medium of a loving relationship. And because we're devotees, Krishna's at the center of that loving relationship. Krishna should be pleased. We want that Krishna will be pleased by this loving relationship. And sure enough, Krishna is pleased when that takes place. I'm making this emphasis because on the Krishna is to be pleased, because that's our teaching, and it's easy to get it's easy to not get it. It's easy to get lost in the feelings of worldly sentiment, which is nicer than, you know, no relationship, but it's not really the purpose. The purpose is pleasing Krishna. Or say it the other way around. If we have if we're on bad terms with Krishna, we're not going to have loving relationships with others. If we have an attitude toward, if we're rebellious towards Krishna's position, maybe not necessarily even like atheistic, open denial of God's existence, but if we're holding on in a material way to some competition with Krishna to be the enjoyer of his creation and his all that is his, then we're not going to have that enviousness towards Krishna is going to show up in our relationships towards each other. So when we're working on loving relationships with one another, we should understand very clearly that if there's an obstacle, I've got an attitude with Krishna problem. There's enviousness, there's competition with Krishna for being the supreme enjoyer, when in fact he's the supreme enjoyer and I'm to be enjoyed. And in this exchange with this other person, I want Krishna to be happy. And in that way I will be the happiest. And the best result will come in terms of the loving relationship we have amongst one another. So I'm breaking it, it's a many different things, but I'm breaking it down to three main components. Spiritual conception, means to purify the heart, and a humble service attitude. Okay. How about you? Can you write yet? Can you write Krishna's name? Can you do? Where's your paper? Go ahead. He's going to lend you his. He's very generous. Can you write? Let me see. Anyone else? Yes. I can't hear you. You're sitting right in front of me and I can't hear you. I'm half deaf. Just bear that in mind. Yeah. Devotional service is the medium. Devotional service. Yes. Attachment develops when you're developing a loving relationship.
Sometimes we forget the purpose.
Yes. We start to think of ourselves as the enjoyer. And that's what the Bhagavatam calls the covered well. Andakupam. Then you're subject to duality. You're not going to be elevated. You're going to be subject to the waves of and whirlpools of the material energy. That's what the enjoying apart from Krishna spirit does. You forget the purpose and you're in the default mode. good intention, a little inattentive blood. Like the razor, Prabhupada's example. Sharp instrument can shave the face. A little inattention. So be attentive. We should remain purposeful. And just it takes practice. And once there's practice, it's not that once you're practiced, you'll be inattentive. Like driving a car. You drive a car? You drive a motorcycle. Okay. When you're learning to drive a motorcycle, it takes a while. The clutch and the gas and the gears and... But when you're riding your motorcycle, even your experienced, don't be inattentive. Don't be inattentive. Because you've got some powerful little machine going and you better be attentive. And when there's inattention, the whole thing you can lose control of and your family will be very unhappy. We will too. So don't be inattentive. Devotional service is very powerful. The medium of loving relationships is very powerful. Don't be inattentive to the purpose behind it. On this, this came up in Delhi, this question you're asking. In order to understand how we should conduct ourselves better, it's very, very valuable to have the model of pure devotion to hold our situation and look at in the light of pure devotion. So like Prahlad Maharaj, he was attached. He was detached, but he was attached. He was very compassionate to those who were suffering unnecessarily. He expressed that to Lord Nrisimhadev. Please help these fools and rascals become free from their suffering. I mean, he understood where they were at, fools and rascals. Rebellious nonsense. He was feeling pain. So, but it's not that because of that feeling pain, he was becoming lethargic and depressed and couldn't do anything because it's so hard for him. When attachment, if there's someone who you're helping, or you're just interacting with, you're being helped, your peer, whatever it is, superior, subordinate, or a peer, let those relationships become an impetus to increase your Krishna consciousness. Then it's spiritual. That which decreases your devotional service, that's a very simple formula. That which increases devotional service is spiritual. That which decreases devotional service is material. Real simple. Another way, seeing things in relation to Krishna, that's spiritual. Seeing things separate from Krishna, that's material. Very simple definition. So, if I start to develop a mood of more and more deeply caring about those with whom I'm associating, you can monitor, is that giving an increase in your remembrance of Krishna and your desire to serve Krishna, or is it taking away from thought of Krishna, eclipsing? your Krishna thought and your enthusiasm for devotional service in general, because you're just getting absorbed in enjoying this relationship. It can end up also in passion, like more activity, but not necessarily more Krishna consciousness. So those are some measures to look at. Anything else? Anything out there in Mosquito Land? Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.